But anyway, like 10 minutes goes by, 15 minutes at the most, and the big wig says, "All right, nice to meet you. Hope we work something out. I got to bounce." And I'm like, "Oh, man, okay, that's all right." But everybody else is still here. And then as soon as he leaves the room, the next guy's like, "Hey, man, good to meet you. I got to bounce." I was like, "Oh, okay." And then the next guy. Next thing you know, like all the important people have left, and it's just kind of me staring at the analyst, which, by the way, these are like Harvard, Yale, Columbia, Stanford. Like, these are the smartest human beings on freaking earth. And Nick goes, "Okay, Tim, that's good. Let's go." And I was like, "What?" And he walks me to the elevator, and the doors close. And he says, "Okay, thanks. We'll be in touch." And the doors close, and I'm going down. I'm like, "What the hell just happened? They flew me up here for a meeting. It was 15 minutes. Who does that?" Long story short, within the next 2 years, I was doing that to people on a regular basis. But anyway.
Yeah, kid. Welcome everybody back to another episode of the Handsome Homebuyer Podcast. My name is Charles, a.k.a. the Handsome Homebuyer, formerly Captain Permit. Great to have you guys back. Obviously, this podcast and every other podcast is sponsored by the one and only Cardinal Financial, but not just any Cardinal Financial office. Sal Rizzolo, out of the Patch Oak office. You know him, you love him. If you don't know him, you will love him. You need to. Listen, real estate investors, real estate attorneys, realtors, everybody's had this nightmare, right? I'm going to run you through it real quick because we got to get today's guest because he is absolutely amazing. So you get a house under contract, you think it's going to close, everything's nicey-nice, you're burning $150 a day as an investor carrying this thing, maybe more, maybe $250, maybe $300. You're 60 days into it into New York because everything moves at an absolute snail's pace. And then all of a sudden, you get a call from the LO that the deal's falling apart because he forgot to tell you about the bankruptcy, or they're swapping 14 family members on the loan because the person's not qualified to buy a turkey sandwich, and the deal blows up. You know whose deals don't blow up? My deals don't blow up. You know why? Because Sal pre-quals every single person that's going to buy a house every time I sell a house, and I sell over 100 houses a year. If he doesn't get the loan and he gives me the stamp of approval, guess what? The loan closes, and that is worth its weight in gold. So if you don't know him, you got to get to know him, or you need somebody like him, but unfortunately, there is nobody like him. With that said, there is nobody like today's guest. That's for shit sure. So I went to this meetup, this mastermind last week, and I've never been to a mastermind. I'm usually in New York by myself on this island. And I'm like, you know what? I got to start talking to like-minded people from around the country because I don't know anything and I don't know what I don't know. So while I was there, there was about 250 top people there doing really big things across the country, self-storage, multifamily, lending, fix and flip, wholesale, you name it, they do it. Great experience. And there's just some people that like hit you. So I happened to be in a breakout room with this gentleman, and he was just literally just throwing fire, at everybody in the room. And I was like, you know what? I got to connect with him. I don't know anything about him. I just feel like there's a tremendous amount of experience, a ton of stories. There's going to be a lot of laughs. And you guys, as the viewership or listenership, depending on how you're consuming this, are going to get a tremendous amount out of this gentleman. So his resume, like normally I'm just like, all right, boom, 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 spit it. I actually had to write this down. It is so insane. So he's currently former Marine, or once you're a Marine, you're always a Marine, right? Executive Director of RCN Capital, right? For the last 18 months, he's an equity partner. He's a high energy sales machine, huge personality, been in real estate for 21 years, has flipped over 2,000 houses. Let me say that again. Has flipped over 2,000 houses. He was the number one home investor franchisee in the country. He invests in anything and everything under the sun. If it's real estate related, notes, Airbnb, flips, you name it, he's done it. NPLs. He was hire number one at B2R Finance. So for those of you who've been in real estate for the last 10 years, B2R was founded by Blackstone and turned into Finance of America. This gentleman was literally hire one. He was the man that basically kicked it off with Blackstone. From Dallas, Texas, please welcome Tim Herriage.
Mr. Handsome, how you doing?
Bam. So let me ask you a question. I want you to be honest. Have you ever had an intro that went anything like that?
No, because I couldn't even hardly understand what you were saying at first, man. You guys talk so damn fast.
I feel like you're one of us, man, except you got a little bit of the country accent, which I wish I had, because there's nothing sexy about New York accents. Like, girls don't like New York accents. Girls like a Texas accent.
Oh, yeah. I brought my boots to the boardroom for sure.
Yes, you did. That was the first thing I noticed. You got like the polo shirt, the dress pants, and then I see the boots. I'm like, there we go. So listen, bro, you've forgotten more about real estate than I'm sure 99% of people that are watching this, you know, will ever know about real estate. So, I mean, give kind of like a 60, 90 second high level overview of who you are, your experience.
Yeah. So you said it right. I'm a former Marine. There's no such thing as an ex-Marine. You said it right. Got out of the Marine Corps, watched a late night infomercial, wanted to get into real estate. Got a job as a project manager for a flipper in Dallas. This is in 2001. Yeah.
Okay.
And what is that? 22 years. Did that for a year. He taught me the acquisition side. He didn't pay me everything he was supposed to pay me. So I went and worked for a homevestor's guy that we were buying from. And then I wanted to buy rentals because I would go to these RIA clubs and I saw these people building long-term wealth. That's what I wanted. And then he said we would buy rentals together. Then he changed his mind. So then I went and worked for this hard money lender that was my first partnership, built a 60 house portfolio in 2 years. Then I met my wife. She wholesaled me a house. You'll love this, Charles.
That is awesome.
This is the assignment. She assigned me this house and she made $3,500 and I made $8,000. So somebody's like, "Ooh, you daisy chained your wife." I was like, "Yes, I did." So we got married. I joined Homevestors because she was already a franchisee. We absolutely crushed it. Then we got absolutely crushed by the Great Recession. And it was so bad. She became a real estate agent full time and I was a stay at home dad. And at night I would go work on our rental properties that were absolute garbage and do whatever I could to get them owner financed, to get a down payment, to go pay my bills at the bank. Anyway, got through that, married, which was more than a lot of my friends did. Then I missed Homevestors. This is the key turning point of my career. I missed Homevestors, the annual convention. What you just experienced at the boardroom, like that's what we had at Homevestors. And we got together every year and ran our mouths and learned from each other. So I started this company called the REI Expo. 4 years, grew it from a 200-person trade show to an 1,800-person trade show. And then Think Realty bought that from me because through the expo, I met an attorney that invited me to speak at a conference. I spoke at a conference. And a small, unassuming British man walked up to me afterwards. He was the founder of Invitation Homes, and he was partners with Blackstone. And he said, I have to say it right, "So, we're working on a project, and we need your help." And whirlwind, long story short, flights to New York, meetings in the boardroom. I got my first taste of the 10-minute meeting with 13 people. Flew home, thought I screwed it up, became a consultant for them 20 days later, and then became the managing director. Ran that till I was tired of it. We took that public in 2021. My friend Jeff at RCN called me. And now we're one of the leading fix and flip lenders and buy and hold lenders in the nation. We do single family, multifamily, and mixed use, ground up construction, long-term rental, and fix and flip financing. We will close about 7,000 loans this year, for a total of about $1.5 to $1.6 billion dollars.
All right, I'm trying to think where I start with that. I think I want to kind of go through the progression a little bit because I think a lot of people are like, Jesus Christ. So basically, like, you're on top of the world. You basically came up with a concept and with Blackstone took a company public, which I'm sure it must have been an insane success in 2021. But people, I think a lot of people are like, That's awesome. But how do you start? So just, can you dive a little bit into like how you got into it, Homevestors specifically, what it is, the kind of value that it gave to you and how your career kind of took off from there in regards to flipping and rentals before it all came crashing down in 2008?
Yeah. I think if you really look at the common thread in the first 5-6 years of my career, I've always been the guy that's in the room and I still am. And you know this, that will ask the question. And if I don't understand, I'm going to stop you and be like, wait, I don't get it. Tell me. So I'm always still and have been willing to ask the stupid question, number one. Number two, I don't do business with people that are unethical. And by doing good business and putting myself out there, I've continued to meet people that could offer me that next leg of the opportunity of the business, which is why when I'm in these rooms, I share so much. Like, oh, I know this guy. I know this guy. I know this guy. Like that's what I do. I go around and meet people. I add value to their businesses, and it's just amazing. My cheat code is go around and add value to people, pay it forward. And like, it's just amazing what comes your way.
Yeah, no, you, I remember you had a quote, in breakout room that your mother told you about something. I don't want to botch it. So I'd rather you say it about, you know, about ethics and.
Yeah. I mean, people in this business, they send all their SMS blast and all their bandit signs and all these things that are against the law, right? Like they get Google voice numbers so that they can't be tracked down. And what I said was, you know, my mama taught me not to do things after dark that, you know, you don't want to get caught doing. I mean, it's just, I run a clean business. I don't break the law. If I owe you money, I pay you money. If you owe me money, you're going to pay me money. And like, not like a loan shark way, but you know, I mean, I don't know. It's just, I run a really simple model, you know, treat people right, do right by others. And right seems to keep happening to me.
No, it makes sense. And your network is extremely impressive. I mean, in the 2 days that I sat there, I was up talking, you knew somebody in my market. I mean, you're rattling off some, you know, very, very, very key high level players in every industry within real estate. So it makes sense. I mean, you have to go out there, you have to meet people. And that's what I think a lot of people don't do. Like they'll have conversations with people and they'll be like, well, how do you get the deals? I'm like, you know, this stuff is just like high school for the most part, outside the marketing. People do business with people that they like. So the more people you're out meeting that like you, the more business, the more opportunity, the more things that are going to come your way. And it's pretty much that simple.
Well, on that note though, right? Like the saying is you want to get more business, be someone that people know, like, and trust. Right. Yeah. And if you're just sitting in your room, not meeting people, well, no one's going to know you. Right. If you're not friendly and kind to people, no one's going to like you. And if they don't know you or like you, the odds of them just knocking on your door and saying, hey, Charles, would you buy my house, please? I don't know you. I don't like you, but why don't you buy my house? Like, it just doesn't work that way. Right. So you got to get out there and let people know, like, and trust you, specifically in this business that's so relationship heavy.
So 2001, when you got into real estate, obviously that's like, you know, right after the dot-com bubble. So things are at the bottom. So now you're about to take that ride. You're about to take that ride to basically the ultimate cliff diver. Yeah. Talk to me about, I mean, listen, you throw 2000 houses around, like, it's 2000. I mean, the logistics and the madness of, bro, of 10 houses, let alone 2000 houses. And let's face it, you weren't born knowing how to do this. So how the hell do you flip and scale a 2000 house operation from nothing in the craziest real estate time there was?
So, you know, number one, right, it's overtime. Number two, I accentuate that you said from nothing, because literally my family, the vast majority, divorce, drug abuse, prison. I mean, I could sit here and tell you all the, I mean, death of family members and best friends dying in front of me. And then in the Marine Corps, I mean, just nasty, nasty. But I'll tell you this, when I was in, my last couple months in the Marine Corps, after the USS Cole was attacked, I made $1,810 a month as a sergeant. And if we went to combat, they didn't take taxes out of your pay and you got an extra $100. So combat was like a $400 pay raise. And I remember that feeling of security being taken away from me when I got out. But then I sold life insurance for about 3 months. I kind of forgot that part. And I'll never forget the first time I made $6,000 in a week selling life insurance. That point, I decided no one would ever tell me what my time was worth again. Right? Like, there would be no cap on what I could make. And fast forward to where we are now. Well, then, how I got into HomeVestors, I was with that flipper that hired me, and they owed me back commissions. They put a cap on some things and they owed me a bunch of money. So I was like, yeah, I'm done with you. And I went and sat down with my great mentor, Bobby Roan, who was the number one HomeVestors office in the Dallas area at the time. And I said, Bobby, I want to come. He had said to me, we bought houses from them. He's like, hey, man, those guys ever make you mad, you come east with the geese, which is Texan for come work for me. And I sit down with him, and I was like, Bobby, I want to work for you. And he pulls out this yellow pad of paper. And he goes, boy, I tell you what, I'll pay you $800 to buy them and $700 to sell them. I said, $1,500. Right? Like, I didn't hear $800 and $700. I heard $1,500. He liked to wholesale a lot. So I started going to every RIA group trying to get my $700. So if I met you, I was going to figure out where you bought, how often you bought, what type of rehabs, what neighborhood, where you got your money, who your lender was, who your GC was. And then I was moving on to the next guy, right? Like, it was like speed dating because I got a taste, man. Like, so that was the first year I ever made over $100,000. And there's a whole nother episode about how the IRS wants part of that money. So we'll talk about that some other time. I didn't really know that then. Well, I'd never had money, right? And when in the Marine Corps, they gave the government the money for you, right? So anyway, I've just always, so like the first year for Vera Homes, we bought 60 houses. The first 30, I had nothing to do with the acquisitions. But then Tim, my mentor at that company before he screwed me, said, you want to learn acquisitions? And I'm like, do I make more? He goes, yes. Then yes. In our first house, 811 Kelso had a for rent sign nailed to the tree. He goes, we're going to try to buy this house. I said, you crazy, man? It says for rent. Like, what are we talking about? And he's like, no, trust me. So we call. They want $80,000. We offer $40,000. I think this guy's insane. Who takes $40,000 less? And then they called back the next day and said they would take $63,000. Now, just remember, they went down $17,000 overnight, and that's how much I made the year before as a sergeant in combat. It just blew my mind. Like, we ended up buying it for like $48,000 or $53,000 or something like that. But the whole point was that those two lessons of what's a lot of money to some people isn't a lot of money to others, and no one will ever tell me what my time is worth, has made it to where after that, you know, I built a 60-something house portfolio in 2 years. I was like one of the first people in the nation to we'd buy the house and wholesale the house, but wrap hard money around the wholesale. So, like, if I had to put 10% down at my bank, I'd get 10% down for you. So I was in the deal for nothing, and I was paying the bank like 9%. You were paying me 18% on $20,000 more. So, like, I was making like 45%. But I didn't know how to do that. So I went to my partner that was a hard money guy. I was like, Scott, hey, what if we finance these? Like, how do we make that work? And he was like, dude, if you do it like this, then we don't have to put any money down. And if I didn't have to put money down, Charles, that meant I got to take money out of the company, right? Otherwise, I'd have to defer my commissions from the company to pay for the down payment. So that was a key to my strategy. I've always outworked the next guy. Like, you just don't outwork me. You don't outwork me. You don't outknow me. I will know more than you, and I will work harder than you. And if I don't know more than you, I'm going to follow you around until I do know more than you.
So I want to dive back in, but I want to take it a little bit forward for a second. So I'm just curious to know, you're 45 years old, right? Great head of hair, by the way. You're a very lucky man. I haven't had that hair. Actually, I never had that hair, but I haven't had any hair in 20 years. You know, you've taken a company from nothing to going public. I mean, you've done a lot. You are as fired up as I've seen anybody, man. What keeps you fired up at 45 years old after basically doing it all?
I have a really clear picture of my why. Now, there was a period after I left Finance of America full-time that I took a couple years off because that was hard. I mean, I was on 6-7 planes a week. We had offices in San Francisco and Utah and New York and Charlotte and Dallas. And I mean, there was 1 week, I swear to God, I left Dallas. I spoke somewhere in Vegas, somewhere in Salt Lake City, somewhere in California, took the red eye, did a board meeting, went to the other office. Like Friday night when I got home, my driver picked me up. And I forgot I was home until I saw Charles. Like, it was that time of my life was Blackstone pays you well, but they're going to work you. They're going to ride you like a rented mule. Yeah. That means work you hard for those of you that don't speak Texan. And, you know, so I took a couple years off. And what happened, and this is a very good lesson, right? You heard me say it. Everything I'll share on this call and anywhere else is not from some sort of I'm not some sort of savant. I've just made every mistake a lot faster than most people do. I got really complacent in 2018 through 2021. Eating barbecue, hanging out. I'd take my son to school in the morning. I'd still be in my pajamas at noon. And my friend Jeff, the CEO and founder of RCN, called me one day and said, you know, congrats on the IPO, da-da-da. What are you up to these days? And I'm sitting here and I was like, oh, I'm day trading. He was like, what the? Like, you're wasting your talents. And so I give him credit for kind of kicking me in the keister a little bit and telling me to get back to work and go do something big. And it's been the best thing I've done is to get my mind re-engaged. Like, I get a lot of energy out of solving problems. So I think the most consistent thing through this entire conversation is, you notice at every stage of the game, I have a mentor. I have someone that's helping me, someone that I listen to. It's the reason I'm in four masterminds now. Like, the amount of energy I get from being educated or challenged or seeing something someone's doing that I'm not doing, like your presentation impressed the hell out of me. I'm like, thanks. This guy is crushing it, right? Like, he's networking, he's on TV. Like, I thought it was cool. And then I leave that session thinking, maybe I should start running TV ads. Maybe I need to hire someone to do my realtor outreach campaign. I hadn't been doing that lately. I'm literally, while you're talking, I'm thinking, God dang, like half the houses I've bought in the last 18 months have been from realtor referrals. I put no energy into that. Oh my God. Like, why am I not, like, so I'm always open-minded to possibility. I believe the law of attraction, right? Like, just put it out there and it'll come by. Did I even answer your question?
No, listen, it was great. I loved it. It all made sense. I'm curious, though, to flip back a little bit on the acquisition side, because a lot of people are always like, how do you get the deals? That's the number one question. Like, Charles, how do you get the deals? How do you get the deals? How do you get the deals? So talk a little bit about your, I mean, obviously, I didn't realize you're still flipping houses today.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how you're doing that with everything going on, but
my wife loves to do it.
Okay. So, but talk a little bit about your acquisition strategy, just for or the company, the business as a whole right now, the volume they're doing, how you're bringing in deals, you know, what's the dispo like? Are you wholesaling them? Are you wholetailing them? Are you renovating them? What are you doing?
So number one is, if you want to stay, this business, this industry in any market is broken up like this. People that have been doing it less than 5 years, and that's going to be the mass market. And then people that have been doing it longer than 10 years, and that's going to be less than 2%. It's hard to stay in this business a long time in one geography. And so right now, I get a lot of realtor referrals because 20 years of doing right in the same market.
Yep.
I send 5,000 postcards a week to a wow. very targeted list. We do a lot of SEO. So we're in Dallas, Fort Worth. And so my website is DFW Investors. So we get a lot of SEO results and leads. We're kind of small. We may do 50 this year, mainly wholesale. So we got, I think, a deal going right now. It's going to be like a 30-something thousand. And we had one. Oh, my God. I thought it was going to be 100. My God. He said we bought it for 173. It was actually 273, though. So now we're going to make like 15, 20 grand. So very targeted direct mail, SEO presence, realtor referrals. I spend a lot of my time right now working on temporary housing, midterm rentals. We have a couple $300,000 and $400,000 houses that are making us $10,000 or $12,000 a month on temporary housing, midterm rental. My wife's about to head down to San Antonio to take care of one of our houses down there. It's more about building net worth and cash flow than it is getting doors, right? Yeah. Like, everybody's like, oh, I got 100 doors. It's like, yeah, but they're all worth $50,000. I have three that equal that, right? Yes. So congrats, you know, woo. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's I don't do much in it. My acquisitions team and dispositions team is one guy, Andrew. he does well, and he runs my business, and we cherry pick the good ones out for me and my wife. But it was kind of funny. About 2 months ago, it was a Tuesday. I'm sitting here at my desk, and Andrew was out of town, and I saw the office, the buy call phone ring. Thought, heck, it's been a while. Just answered it. It was an estate deal. The lady used every trigger word we were ever taught, right? Like, I must, I have to, I need to, now, quickly. And I'm sitting here in flip-flops, and I was like, I don't really want to do that. I was like, where is it again? She's like, Rowlett, and it's like 10 minutes away. I was like, I can be there in 30 minutes. She's like, oh, really? I was like, yeah, why not? So I go over there. I do the thing. It's been a long time since I've been on appointment. And I did the takeaway, right, where it's like, you know, I hope you get more than this, but the most I can pay is this. And I left, and I told my wife, I said, I don't think I'll get it. Man, it didn't take that lady 20 minutes to call and ask me to write it up. But it was fun. And then, like, the whole team's like, what the hell? Old man can still do it. I'm like, that's right. Daddy's got the chops, man. So, yeah, that's what it looks like.
So I think it's important. So I think the average flipper, especially around here, is doing like maybe 1, 2, 3, 4 deals a year. And when you're kind of stuck in your own little micro market, you don't realize what's out there. You know, I've heard stories about this, but then when you get to a place like Boardroom and you meet people, there are absolute whales out there that are doing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of deals across multiple states, counties, everything. It's wild. So it just kind of makes you realize what is possible. I think the hardest thing for most people is, and you know, and I know it was for me, and it's something I'm still working through, and it seemed, I mean, you seem to have mastered it pretty well, is to turn into an actual CEO, right? To be really running your business. Everybody starts there, you're out there, you're in the street, you're in the dirt, you're slinging offers, but how do you then build a business? And then we can kind of segue that into, how does B2R go from being a concept to a publicly traded company?
Yeah, all business is nothing more than manufacturing money. And I can take any business in the world and draw it on one piece of paper. There's a pipe, and at the end, money comes out. And to be a real business owner, you have to learn to break that pipeline up into the different stages, right? So in the real estate investment game, it's lead generation, right? It's lead processing, it's lead conversion, and it's lead fulfillment, and equals cash, right? Like in the mortgage origination business, it's lead generation and lead processing and lead conversion and fulfillment and cash, right? If I'm selling you Apple iPhones, right, I gotta generate the leads, I got to convert the leads, I got to provide the product, and I have to sell the product, and then I get cash. Like, all business is the same, and we make things. Michael Gerber wrote a great book called The E-Myth, the yep. Entrepreneurial Myth, right? We trick ourselves. We think, oh, well, I'm special. I learned this different. I know this or that. And it's like, you don't, right? If you look here on my screen, there's a guitar, right? Like, they make thousands of those, right? And the person that created Jackson Guitars didn't have to make them all, right? Like it's, and they still have great quality. Jackson's still a great guitar brand. These American flags here from my grandfather's, right? Like, they're American flags, but somebody's making them. They're probably someone in China now. But I don't know. It's like we trick ourselves to think we're better or that we're the only ones that can do it. So although you may be a great salesperson, the moment that you're in the position to where all you have is your time, then you have no leverage. And if you go back to like sixth grade physics or math or whatever it is, right? The little example of the rock with the seesaw thing, and you may not be able to lift this, but if you just push down here and you get leverage, it lifts. So I'm all about leverage, leveraging your time, leveraging people, leveraging money, because when you have no time and you have no people and you have no money, then something's got to give, and it's time. Time is what has to give first. And until you commit your time and then leverage your time, it's very, very, very hard to grow beyond where you're at.
Yeah, no, I mean, a lot of people don't realize, and I realize it's not that long ago. It's like, you know, let's say you're flipping houses or buying rentals, doing Airbnb, whatever it is. You can make a lot of money. I mean, but you have a job. It might be a high paying job. You could be making millions of dollars, but it's still a job. You know, if you go away for a week and you come back, it's not the same. So until you can get to the point where, like, my ultimate goal for this year is to be able to, like, you know, leave for 30 days. And when I come back, it's running better or at least the same. That's when you know you have a real business. Otherwise, well, you don't have a business.
One of the most valuable things from last week in Austin at the boardroom with you and Kent was when Kent was talking to you about that CFO role. And there was a 5 or 6 word phrase that he used that I've already repeated 20 or 30 times. He said, that person has to drive tasks, not manage tasks. And I just was like, because there's some people in one of my organizations that's the problem. I brought them in originally to manage tasks, to kind of take shit off my plate. Like, here's the stack of taxes for the year. Please handle this, right? Like, and if they're only managing, they'll never get beyond managing, right? Like, so when I heard him say that to you, it's like, I texted it to my wife. I emailed it to this other guy and this other business I'm part of. Like, I'm like, oh my God, like, this is it. Like, the problem with that person is they're not driving it. They're managing it. And I mean, I move fast. So here we are less than a week later and there's already plans in place to take care of that person. Because you have to that Literally. And that's the power of these rooms, right? A 6 word phrase was enough to completely solve my problem that I knew was there, but I didn't know how to say what my problem was. And that's the other problem that I'd tell you half your audience right now is multitasking. They got this playing in the background while they're driving and not paying attention or having another conversation. Too many people aren't active listeners, Charles. And you have to be an active listener. Pay attention to where you're at. Be present. It's amazing what you meant. Like, I could have easily not been listening to Kent when he was talking to you. But by listening to Kent talk to you, I felt like he was hitting me in the back of the head.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's funny that you said that because, like, we were having that conversation. So much stuff was going on. And I didn't remember him saying that. And just maybe the way you said it about, you know, don't manage tasks, drive tasks. I wrote that down. I'm like, that's it. Because that's what, and again, nobody tells you that, nobody teaches you this shit growing up, right? But as, like, a C-suite or as executive type of person, you're supposed to be leading. You're not supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be leading.
Right.
And I think that's what people don't understand, myself included. Talk to me about the B2R rise. That had to be crazy. You're sitting there.
I fly to New York. I go to this meeting. I get out of the car. I go up to 43rd floor. There's these 25-foot mahogany walls everywhere. And, like, the most rich human beings I've ever seen in my life just strolling through a cafeteria with full service 24 hours a day with a private chef. Like, I mean, this is just crazy. And I sit down at this conference room table. There's 15 people there. And Nick is like, he shows up and all these big wigs from Black. Okay, tell him this. And I'd start talking. And he'd shut me off. Okay, now tell him this. And I'd start talking. Shut me off. Okay, now talk about this. And I'd start, like, I was his puppet. But anyway, like, 10 minutes goes by, 15 minutes at the most. And the big wig says, all right, nice to meet you. Hope we work something out. I got to bounce. And I'm like, oh, man, okay, that's all right. But everybody else is still here. And then as soon as he leaves the room, the next guy's like, hey, man, good to meet you. I got to bounce. I was like, oh, okay. And then the next guy. Next thing you know, like, all the important people have left, and it's just kind of me staring at the analyst, which, by the way, these are like Harvard, Yale, Columbia, Stanford. Like, these are the smartest human beings on freaking earth. And Nick goes, okay, team, that's good. Let's go. And then I was like, what? And he walks me to the elevator, and the doors close. And he says, okay, thanks. We'll be in touch. And the doors close, and I'm going down. I'm like, what the hell just happened? They flew me up here for a meeting. It was 15 minutes. Who does that? Long story short, within the next 2 years, I was doing that to people on a regular basis. But anyway, I call my wife. I get back in the car. I'm going to the airport. I call my wife. I'm like, I'm done. She's like, what did you do wrong? I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. So I get an email. And he says, okay, we want you to be a consultant for 90 days and then maybe help run the thing. Tell me how much you want and what all you can do. So I send this email I really think out this job description of what I could do to help the company get started. And then I got to figure out what to charge Blackstone. I don't know. So I picked a number and I don't hear anything for like 2 weeks. I'm kind of get like, man, I guess I screwed it up. Maybe I asked for too much. A consulting contract comes in my email from some lady named Allie that was the executive assistant somewhere for one of Nick's portfolio companies. The first paragraph is verbatim what I typed as the job description. The compensation was exactly what I asked for. And I went down all to my wife. I'm like, is this real? Like, this is just weird. The first couple months, it's like an hour or two conference call a day or week. And you're talking about logos and colors and branding and business structures and tax issues and financing options and lending options, warehouse lines. Very little talk about the product, right? A lot of talk about the business. Where are we going to be headquartered? Where are we hiring people? And then it's time to start. We're going to go to Charlotte. It's going to be B2R Finance. We went through like 20 freaking names. It was a B2R stand for buy to rent finance. And in the UK, where Nick is from, they do buy to let financing. So let is rent. So that's kind of where we got it. It got to where I would fly to Charlotte on Mondays to start interviews all week. And I mean, I was just churning through 10, 15 interviews a day. So much that it got to where I was that executive that was like the final stamp. And I'd come in, I'd look at your resume. And I already knew at this point if I was going to hire you or not by the way you were sitting or the way you were looking or whatever. I'd be like, looks like you changed jobs a lot. What's that about? You'd answer. I wasn't listening. I was already ready on to go to the next interview. I'd be like, all right, great. Good to meet you. Good luck. I'm going to send the guy in that needs to talk to you. And I'd leave. Then we start offering these loans and it was like, okay, we're going to do portfolio loans. The minimum is 10 million and you have to have 30 houses and a perfect credit score and non-recourse and full lockbox and blah, blah, blah. Like basically a hotel loan. We found someone to do it. And our first loan was like $4.4 million. And then I actually found this the other day. Nick would email me what needs to be changed to make it better. And I'd send these long emails and he'd say no. Or the capital markets guys would say no. We went from one person on October 23rd, 2013 to over 200 within a year. Got up over 300. Bought lending.com, bought Dwell Finance, bought Jordan Capital Finance. We were combining it all together. I ended up running all sales, marketing, and business development. So I had, 100 something people underneath me at the company. And one day in late 2015, we were getting ready to do the Finance of America merger. I looked at my wife and I said, I'm done. I'd gone from entrepreneurial Tim that negotiated with Blackstone about equity, not about salary or bonus or all that, to miserable soul Tim that was just flying around in first class and just going from meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting. And it really drained me. And I didn't handle it right. I was being really tough on my body. So one night I just resigned, which they were paying me more money than I ever thought I would make. I mean, and I had all the prestige. I mean, I'm the managing director for a Blackstone company. I'd fly to Manhattan and Lord, the people at the Waldorf would give me the presidential suite every time I was there because Blackstone owned the freaking thing. I mean, it was just wild. But I'm going to fast forward. My wife tells me this, when you know what you don't want, you know what you want. So now that I came out of kind of retirement for RCN, I don't have a department. I don't have a division. I don't have employees, and I don't have an office. Jeff and I know each other well enough. Number one, you'll never question my work ethic. I will get on a plane anytime I need to, anytime it's going to provide a critical function for the company in development. But I don't need to be managing people. I don't need to be filling out paperwork. And I don't need to be traveling for the sake of traveling, right? So the beautiful thing is I share all that because B2R was really hard. And I learned a lot of valuable lessons to help set up my life now. And you asked earlier kind of what I'm working towards. My 13-year-old son will finish high school in 2028. I will have exited all of my active companies and all of my single family properties by 2028. I'll be 50-ish years old. And my wife and I will travel the world. And what I will do at that time for business is I will be an angel investor for veterans that want to start their businesses in real estate investment. So I will help make veterans millionaires through real estate investing.
That's awesome.
Teaching them the business and investing in their business.
Something tells me that you're going to be way too young. You might get a little bored and you might jump back into something because I think you have way too much. I mean, 50s, you joke that we're old men, but like, I don't feel old, man. I think we got a lot of life left.
I'll be on boards of directors. I won't have an active job. I'll be on Zoom calls. Like, I would love nothing more than to find a Tim Harridge back in 2001 that I could invest millions of dollars in his business and have weekly Zoom calls with him, help them avoid all the problem, all the dumb crap I did, and make money with them, right? Like, I'm not doing this, like, it's not philanthropy, it's not charity, right? Like, I want to help them build portfolios. And just imagine if I'd walked into that situation out of the Marine Corps. I just got goosebumps telling you this. Like, it excites me. And I could help them just build millions of dollars in net worth and cash flow and avoid some of the headaches and heartaches that I had along the way. That's a life well lived.
No, I agree. On that note, kind of as a roundup, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, it's hard, man. Stuff is expensive. There's a lot of kids coming out of college with crazy debt. You know, they have these educations, but how much did they really learn in school? And there's a lot of like lost people out there. You know, what kind of advice do you give to, you know, the youth coming up, anybody in their 20s as to, you know, how to prepare for the future, how to do what you love, how to grow a business, just in general?
First piece of advice is one day will come sooner than you think. And if you're sitting there thinking like, one day I'll start saving for retirement, or one day I'll start keeping investment property, or one day I'll invest in my education, or one day I'll try to have a significant relationship. Life is short, and there's a reason people say that. I mean, when I talk about all the things I've done in the last 22 years, it's surreal that much time has gone by. It doesn't feel like it. It just, like, it feels like yesterday I was overseas. I mean, you know, so I'd say, and then also you can never spend some time learning about compounding time, compounding energy, compounding appreciation, compounding interest. Because time is your friend only if you're doing things that time helps make better. What do I mean? 20 years into business, if I'd kept one more house per year, I'd be worth at least another $10 million. Like, it's just wild, right? So start investing in yourself and your future before you know it, or as soon as possible, because it will be here before you know it. And never, my personal website says, you asked me for one thing, I'm telling you multiple. My personal website says the business is the vehicle, not the dream. And I want everybody to remember that, because we as entrepreneurs start to forsake those that love us the most and those that are supposed to be the reason that we're doing this. And that's ultimately why I left B2R, is I was just, I got to where I was gone all the time. So the people that love you, the people that support you, the people you love, make sure you make time for them along the way, because they may not be there or you may not be there when the time comes that you were hoping to then start paying attention to them.
And one final thing, because I know you mentioned it a few times. I assume that you're big into mentors, because you've had a mentor in every aspect of your life. But there's a lot of people, like when I first got into real estate, I had a mentor, and a lot of people said to me, like, you know, why are you paying this guy to be a mentor? Like, if he was really that good, he'd be doing it. Why would he be, you know, taking money from you? So if you could just touch on, you know, mentorship in general, what it's done for you, and you know, your thoughts on it.
Yeah. So first off, anyone that's worth anything is going to charge for their time, because their time is their most valuable asset. So it's kind of, they may charge in other ways. Like, they may be your hard money lender, and then they're willing to have lunch with you because they're making money off of you at that point in time. I'm not saying it has to be a direct exchange for time, but like, expect people to make money. Don't be a sponge, right? Because sponges only take, they don't give. Like, you have to give. But my gosh, I mean, I would be, somebody asked me the other day, Charles, said on one of these podcasts, they said, tell me about the first deal you did on yourself, on your own. And I thought about it, and my answer was, I've never done a deal on my own. I haven't. I've always either had my wife or a mentor or someone involved in the transaction. And I believe in networking. I believe in mentorship wholeheartedly. I would not be where I am today without all the good people in my life that have helped me along the way. And, you know, like the saying goes, Kent says it all the time in the boardroom. You want to go fast, go alone. You want to go far, go together.
Yeah. Well, listen, I really appreciate the time. I've learned a ton. I got a bunch of gems that I really want to slap on t-shirts here. Like, some of these sayings that you have, I'm like, we can make a killing just with that. So listen, thank you very much. Obviously I'm always here for you if you ever need anything. And I hope we can stay connected, because you're a brilliant man, and I love the energy and everything you've done.
I'm gonna call you next time I'm in the city.
Absolutely. Please do. Listen, if people are interested in, you know, RCN, people that are in the space that are either looking for a fix and flip loan, new construction, or refinance, you know, what's the best way to reach out to RCN? Tell us a little bit about the products and how that works.
Yeah, rcncapital.com, rcn_capital on all the socials. And then my name is Tim Herridge. It's just like carriage, but with an H-E instead of a C-A. And I'm the only one out there. So hit me up on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, all that. It's at Tim Herridge on every single social channel, because I didn't have to compete for the name.
Love it. Obviously, I'm the handsome home buyer. You know, if you have a house that smells like cat pee, dated from the 1960s, 6 inches of mold on the wall, human waste floating past the basement steps, I'm quick, I'm easy. Lord knows I'm a good time. I want to buy it. 516-777-SOLD. That's a wrap.